Welcome to the Mojo Podcast, a place for curious minds to fill up on insight and inspiration to apply to your life so you can keep your mojo flying and not falling. I'm your host, Richard Stokes, and it's a pleasure to be with you for episode 2 of the 5th series of the Mojo Podcast. And in this current series, I'm talking to a group of people I'm calling the practitioners, experts in their field, who have truly walked the walk before talking the talk, and whose wisdom, advice, and tips will help you and your mojo, and frankly, their stories will inspire you, perhaps to get a little unstuck, to move again in the direction you choose, to find flow over resistance, in short, to find your mojo. Now, today's invitation is to think about a subject that affects us all, whatever your gender or your age. It has importance for us every day and for most of our lives. This episode is for everyone. Today, we're going to talk about sex. And my pause there is deliberate. What comes up for you when I say that word? It can be quite loaded, right? Well, today I'm joined by an amazing guest to have a powerful conversation about sex. Indeed, her purpose is to help promote sexual energy as a force for good, because sex and intimacy have huge impact on our lives, maybe more than we believe.
The more we can lift the shame of talking about sex, the better it is for everyone. And just to briefly say, yes, it's about pleasure and it's about satisfaction in relationships, but then that affects our physical health and mental health. Lifting the shame of talking about it helps protect our safety. There's so much more to it than just simply, are we having a good time in bed? You know, it's an important social issue, I think, lifting the shame.
Ruth Ramsay is an adult sex educator and coach, and she'll explain exactly what that does involve and what it doesn't involve. Ruth talks about how she works with her clients and why people come to her. She also speaks with great honesty and openness about her own journey to this incredible work and why her sense of purpose is just so strong. And when she chose to hide what she did, for good reason, as you'll hear, the impact that this had on her. Ruth's goal is to normalise our relationship with sex so that we can all have more fun, less fear, to treat sex as a hobby and simply be more open with a subject which is so very natural yet tied up with our beliefs about right and wrong, good and bad. Ruth is hugely generous with the tips and advice she shares. There's so much in here for anyone interested in learning more about their sexual lives. The show notes are full of links, so please go and check those out after the show. And you may be asking yourself a little question. How do I know Ruth? And it's a fair question. And in my bid to normalise and destigmatise this conversation, I can tell you that my wife and I have worked with Ruth, and it's been really important to our relationship and hence our mojo. So I'll talk a little bit about our experience in this episode. So this one is very personal, and it's a real treat actually to speak to Ruth again, because she's such an expert in this area. I really hope you get something from this, an idea, some more curiosity, the desire to make some change, and whatever you get, that's great. My only ask, as ever, is to please leave some feedback for this humble podcast with a review on Apple Podcasts, and do share it with anyone you know who may benefit. That might be your partner, a close friend, anyone you think who this will be useful for. Okay, let's get into it. Here's my mojo conversation with Ruth Ramsay. So welcome back to the Mojo Podcast. Great to be back for another episode. And I'm delighted to have my guest join me today from Buckinghamshire in the UK, Ruth Ramsay. Ruth, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. I'm very excited to do this podcast. Unusually, I'm a little bit nervous. I've got a little flutter, but I see that as a good thing.
Oh, so hopefully a good indicator of what's to come. Mm. And Ruth, thank you for your time today and joining us today. I've obviously talked about how we know each other already, having worked with you in the last year, and really want to get into, you know, your wisdom, your experience in this area around intimacy, around our sexual lives, which, you know, as we will talk about, I'm sure there's a lot of stigma, there's taboos around. So there's lots of us to uncover today. I'm very excited to get into it. But of course, my first question, I want to check in with you. How is your mojo today out of 10?
I would say I am an 8 out of 10 this morning. Okay. So pretty high.
And so for you, an 8 is pretty high, because it's all relative, this score, of course.
Yeah. I would say 8 is kind of what I would aim for in terms of on a sort of day by day basis. If I was a 7, I'd be thinking, okay, how can I get this up? If I was a 9, I would be thinking, oh, this is great. You know, what's making me a 9? I would say an 8 is generally what I look for in my kind of day-to-day working life. 9 and 10 is reserved for ecstatic moments, be that around sex or clubbing or whatever. I think if I was at a 9 all the time, I might not be very productive.
Great. Well, I think we might get into a bit of that later on in terms of the things that you need for your mojo to get up to those 9s and 10. But really interesting that 8 is an aim for steady state for you. If you're at that is a really good place. And that sort of 9 and 10 sounds quite a special place.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so when I say that word mojo, as I'm on this journey to just talk to more and more people about it and what it means to them, what does it mean to you?
Well, it was interesting thinking about this, knowing that I was going to be on the podcast. But what came to me, first of all, is when my default facial expression is a smile, then I know my mojo is good. Expanding on that, when I have an assumption with whatever I meet that day, be it an email or a person or whatever, when I have an assumption of positive, good energy, and in a mindset of what if it all goes right, rather than the what if it all goes wrong mindset. When I'm smiling, when I'm expecting good, and when my attitude is what if it all goes right, that's when I know that I've got good mojo.
Fabulous. And I love that there's an external expression of it, the smile, but with this sense of, you know, how am I going to meet the day? And what I love in there is there's this choice you're making. How is it going to go right today? Yeah, that's a great expression, I think, of what mojo is, and as it's very personal to you. And Sarith, let's sort of jump in a little bit here in terms of, because I thought everyone would be like, wow, okay, you're talking to a sex coach, Richard. So those are my words, not your words. How would you describe what you do, by the way?
I would describe myself as an adult sex educator and coach. When I started the business, I was calling myself a sex coach. And then through experience, I learned what a significant job there is in terms of educating people before they can be ready for coaching, what a need there is and how ready people are for that education, but who are not yet ready to actually sit down and have a coaching session about sex. So yeah, adult sex educator and coach.
Right. So the education first, and then the coaching can kick in when people are in the right space for it.
Yeah.
And so can you unpack that a little bit in terms of what you do, who you do it with? Because I think, again, you've, as you said, you took your time to work out, this is how I present myself to the world. And I think, as I sort of slightly set up at the beginning, there's probably a lot of assumptions around what adult sex educator and coach might do or not do. So should we just get into a bit of that first before we kind of dive into what brought you to it?
Yeah, well, I think there were a lot more assumptions and misconceptions when I just described myself as a sex coach. For those of us who are in the coaching, life coaching, business coaching type area, we think of conversation. But for other people, when they hear the word coach, they think of sport, for example. It's like, you're a sex coach? Are you going to like need videos of my wife and I in the bedroom so you can give us tips and pointers? It's like, no, not that kind of coach. But adult sex educator, most people kind of have a bit of an understanding of what that is.
Yeah.
And basically, I am sharing information and resources with people for them to learn as adults, for them to learn about the basics of anatomy, of sexual science, that fundamental stuff. So, for example, if I'm having a discovery call, a free initial chat with a couple, and they want to have a better time in bed, and particularly if they want the woman to have a better time in bed, A question that I will ask them is, if I gave you each piece of paper, could you draw the full structure of the clitoris? And I'll say beforehand, if your answer to the next question is no, you are normal. Don't worry, you are normal. And I'll say, could you draw that? And if their answer to that is no, then that tells me that there's education that needs to happen first, because how can we jump to me actually coaching them around this when they don't have an understanding of the basics of anatomy? So sometimes I say it's the sex education that we should have had at school in our late teens. How can we come from a place of not understanding those basics about arousal science, about the basics of how we're typically wired, and about anatomy? So I'm not a scientist, and I'm not medically qualified, but what I do is share information in a way that people tell me is revelatory, because it's so entirely open and shame-free. You know, I'm just sat here talking about things. I deliberately don't dress sexy. You know, I want to normalize this conversation, the conversation around sex. So I'm sharing information, I'm sharing resources. That's the first step with the education. But then what I always want to do as well is give people the supported time and space to apply what they're learning to themselves. And this is where we get more towards coaching, but not in the traditional sense of actually being face-to-face or over Zoom face-to-face.
Yeah.
Because most people at the education point are definitely not in a space to actually talk like we're talking now, you know. So what I came up with was what I call guided self-coaching. So, for example, I might explain something about arousal science. So the concept that we have our turn-ons, and we're familiar to thinking about, oh, what turns me on, or what's going to turn my partner on, but that we also have our turn-offs. And we can think of them as accelerators for the turn-ons and brakes for the turn-offs. And that if our brakes are being hit, if the things that are turning us off are happening at that time, then it doesn't matter how much pressure we put on the accelerator, how many of our turn-ons we try and add in, we're not going to go anywhere. So I'll explain this. I will credit the scientist who first came up with it. And then I will say, so now I'm going to give you some time right now, not as homework later, but right now, to think about your personal turn-ons, your turn-offs, to list them. And then you're going to circle your biggest turn-on, your biggest turn-off, and come up with a strategy for each on how to amplify that turn-on and how to minimize that turn-off. So clients are learning something. And this could be on webinars, it could be on the online course that I do. They're learning, and then they're actually applying it to themselves, because we're all so unique. So first of all is the basic education, then guided self-coaching. And then clients are sometimes then ready for actual one-to-one coaching.
Got it. Thank you.
Yeah.
And as someone, as I said, who's been through one of your courses, obviously with my wife, the word you use there about revelations is absolutely I can absolutely say is absolutely the case, and various things that came up. And you know, you talked about, you know, anatomy science. You know, frankly, the last time I'd probably been I'm not sure the word taught is right, this was would have been at school a really really long time ago, by a sort of an awkward biology teacher. It was like, oh god, I've got the sex ed class to do now. And then after that, frankly, it's playground chat, and then films and porn, probably, is where we're getting our cues from. So the fact that you break that down and show very clearly this is actually what's going on in this case in the female body, for me was like, oh wow, okay. I'm glad I've come to this now. It's not too late. It's definitely not too late to learn. So I know firsthand that those things are super important. And how much of it when you're working with clients is around, because you're getting into there, it is, yeah, I know you are a qualified coach, and it is coaching. It is this sense of here's the material, here's your chance to go and think about it, and now what do you want to do with it? It's kind of the goal, the action part of it. How important is that to your clients?
I think when they have the foundation of the knowledge about their bodies, about partners' bodies, when they realize that they're normal, that's the big revelation from a lot of people. It's like, oh, I'm normal. And when they have helped sort of lose the shame of talking about it, and they've been able to recognize how their assumptions around how sex should be have been based around, as you say, the media, porn, etc. And they can kind of free themselves up to a whole new way of looking at sex and sort of lose those assumptions. What I tend to find then is people are in a good place just to kind of go off and learn and explore on their own. People need one-to-one coaching when there's something very specific that's getting in the way of them feeling fully free to explore their sexual life. Obviously, if it's related to trauma in the past, that's when I would hand over to a therapist or counsellor.
Yeah.
So as you'll understand, as a coach, I'm working with people who are ready to look forward and take supported active steps forward.
Yeah.
And typically, once someone understands their body, has been through maybe a period of outrage and anger at why was I not taught this? You know, why have I spent decades with, in some cases of clients, decades as an adult? I look back, my marriage might have survived, all sorts of stuff. There can be a lot of anger of why didn't I know this earlier? But once they've got over that, part of their education will be realizing that sex doesn't stop when we get to 45 or 50 or whatever they've assumed. And they've been able to develop this optimism about having sexual pleasure in their lives right up until the end of their active life. At that point, there are so many resources out there. And maybe if they've found that they're curious about kink, there's fantastic kink clubs. If they found that they want to experience lots of different physical sensations, you know, there's incredible innovations in sex toys at the moment. And it's a lovely point for me when I can just sort of set them off to continue the journey on their own. Because there is great stuff out there once we get past the blocks and the shame and the lack of knowledge.
And we're gonna come on and talk about resources, etc. I know before the end, but that bit about, you know, I think beliefs in there, that seems to be a key area in terms of, you know, we talk about self-limiting beliefs in coaching all the time. And as you say, it seems that's what people come to you with, whether they knew that what it was, or it, or that belief exposes itself in its work with you. Is that what you're finding, that this our belief systems kind of get in the way?
Definitely, I see people's belief systems getting in the way. And the beliefs that we can have are so strong and go right back to our earliest days and what we saw our parents or caregivers doing, what messages we received from them. Messages from the media are so strong. A comparison that I give, that various other sex educators give as well, because it's so perfect, is to say, you wouldn't expect to learn to drive from watching the Fast and the Furious films. So why do we think we can learn about sex from watching mainstream films? You know, and then there can be very deep-seated beliefs from religion, from school, from very early sexual experiences. So there's a beliefs process that I work through with people where we look at, where does the belief come from? Do we trust the source of that belief? Is that source always correct about everything? So would you trust the mainstream entertainment media? Is it correct in everything it portrays? Like, well, no, of course not. Then looking at what would be a more positive belief to replace that with, and then if necessary, the kind of the stepping stones to get to that new belief. And it's a process that can be repeated again and again and again with different beliefs as they come up and with different kind of nuances of beliefs. Mm-hmm. Normally, once people realize that they've been basing their knowledge around something which, of course, isn't a source of education. And very often when I just give that Fast and the Furious example, you see people go, wow, that is a big light bulb moment. And all through this journey, right from the first conversation, the first light bulb moment people will tell me they've had is just to hear me talking so normally. As I say, sat here normally, I haven't put red lipstick on or anything. It's not what people expect. That's the first light bulb. Like, wow, we can just sit and have a conversation about sex that isn't sexy. I think that's one of the big things. And then from there, it's just light bulb after light bulb. Realizing that the sources of their beliefs aren't to be trusted. That's definitely a big series of light bulbs.
Yeah. So this whole, you are normal. You are, many people, most people are thinking exactly like you are thinking. That kind of assurance, judgment is a very heavy thing, sort of self-judgment and criticism. And you sort of, when you lift that away, I found that, I can be more open to this. It's not about, doing things wrong. It's about understanding who you are. And so let's have a look at, if it's okay with you, what brought you to here, to being in this position where you can normalize this conversation around sex and intimacy, which I think is really, really important. And as I said, as a source for people's mojo as well. I've talked to people an awful lot about their mojo, and guess what? No one ever says, sex life is fabulous at the moment. And that's why my mojo is really good. It's just not spoken about. I'd love to get into a bit of your story, Ruth, if that's okay with you, in terms of what brought you to here.
It starts very young for me. Somehow, when I was sort of six, seven years old, I knew vaguely what a striptease artist was, what a striptease artist did, because I had this fantasy that wasn't heavily eroticized at that age, but a fantasy of being on a stage and slowly removing my clothes and having this adoring audience. My mum and dad had all the James Bond books, and I was a reader at a young age. And I think there's a couple of scenes in a couple of the books that are set in strip clubs. So maybe it was from that. But I had this fantasy from a young age and felt very kind of drawn to that, but was definitely an ugly duckling kid, went to an all-girls school, wasn't even kissed till I was 18, and never dreamt that I could actually be a striptease artist or it'd be in that world at all. So instead, I worked hard at school on my other love, which was writing, and did a journalism degree in the mid-90s, and was working as a fashion business journalist in my mid-20s, still with this fantasy of being a striptease artist, when I saw an advert for London School of Striptease, which was brand new at the time. And I was like, wow, okay, let's go and explore this long held fantasy, never dreaming it was actually going to go where it did, which was that I did the beginner's course. I loved it. I did the intermediate course. I loved it. And then actually started working as a stripper part time. People sometimes ask me about terminology. I say striptease artist initially because some people have negative connotations around the word stripper, which I don't have. So I am now, from this point, I'm going to use that term. Started stripping in small London and sort of London area pubs rather than the big lap dance clubs. Started stripping in the small pubs and loved it, just absolutely loved it, felt at home, felt that it was my life's purpose, felt that what I was doing was a very deeply nourishing, positive thing. It wasn't seedy, it wasn't wrong. And so ditched the journalism, much to the horror of parents, of most of my friends, and became a full-time pub striptease artist. And I did that full-time for 12 years. And then lots of other stuff happened around that. So I started teaching striptease very early on because I'd because firsthand I'd experienced the power of it in releasing my sexual mojo, let's say.
Yeah.
So I was teaching all sorts of people. Very early on, I was nominated in the Erotic Awards, which were an annual show that recognised not who was technically best necessarily in various areas. And there was Stripper of the Year, Sex Worker, Film, Book, you know, all sorts of areas. It wasn't just about technically how good someone was. It was also about their intention and why they were in this work. And I was nominated early on and I didn't win that year. But it was all in aid of a charity that's still around called Outsiders, which helps people with physical disabilities find sexual partners. And the after show party was my first ever kind of sex party. I mean, it wasn't a crazy orgy, but there was sex going on. It was my first ever experience of anything like that. And around half of the people there had physical disabilities, and I'd never spent any time around people with physical disabilities. And it was just this wonderful eye-opener of like, of course everybody can be sexual and should be able to, if they wish to, enjoy their sexual energy and enjoy their bodies. And I remember the next day thinking, I want to find out more about this charity, and being so horrified at the degree to which people with disabilities are not recognized as erotic beings at all. And I then became very passionate about that as a cause and ended up winning an erotic award for my involvement in that. And what it was all kind of coming to was me recognizing and wanting to promote sexual energy as a force for good. And that's what I now say is my life's purpose, is lifting the shame and recognizing it as a force for good. There is a lot that has gone wrong, I think, around that, that has led to where we are now in society, which is a whole dark topic, which I don't want to go on into in this podcast. But a lot has gone wrong that has meant sexual energy can be used in negative ways. Yeah. But I believe at its core, it is an incredible force for good for everybody who wishes to experience it. That's what I was doing in my stripping years, was kind of generating and sharing that energy. I was always out as a stripper. I always paid tax from the start. My parents knew, everyone knew. Right. So I was able to talk about and do activism around the rights of exotic dancers, the rights of sex workers, the rights of people with disabilities, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I was modeling and I was traveling internationally with some of this as well. Dabbled in all sorts of other things, a little bit of dominatrix work, this and that, running underground lap dance parties, basically had an incredible time. Then met my now husband, and to be with him meant moving out of London, becoming a stepmom. We weren't things that I'd ever foreseen in my life, but that's where life was taking me. I was also getting into my late 30s and recognized that I needed to have a plan B. I needed my next thing, because to strip into your 40s in public venues is almost impossible. And the venues that I loved were closing down, and all sorts of stuff was going on. So I thought, okay, maybe it's time to leave, and moved out to the countryside. I was not ready to leave London. I tried to tell myself I was, you know, I'd been there 20 years, but I get some of my mojo from being around other people. I love being in a big crowd. Suddenly I'm in sheep-strewn countryside, in the middle of fields, in a barn conversion, and friends who were ready to leave London were so jealous. But I was just like, I don't like this at all. But I made my mission the creation of a happy step family.
Yeah.
That's what everything was about. I'd studied and qualified as a personal fitness trainer because I thought it ticks a lot of the same boxes as stripping, in that I'm self-employed, I'm on my feet, I've got music on. But most importantly, I'm in a very intimate space with people straight away. I'm not someone who likes meaningless chit chat, or to me, meaningless chit chat around events. I like to get in there straight away. And obviously with a personal trainer, fitness trainer, right from your first session, you're sweating in front of them, and it's an intimate relationship.
I guess it's quite to get the most from it, you need to expose an element of yourself.
I did that, but deep down, I couldn't leave the stripping behind, or I wasn't ready to. And I remember once a year or so, I'd get my big suitcase of all my stripping outfits out from under the bed. And I'd think, right, I need to clear through this. I'll keep a few for souvenirs, but I need to get rid of the rest. And I just end up in floods of tears, just thinking, I can't do this. I kind of had the realization, I'm a full-time striptease artist who just happens to not have stripped for 4 years and to be working as a PT. But I am still a striptease artist. But life circumstances as they were at the moment didn't allow me to move from that. I did create a happy step family, and that's probably my proudest achievement in my life. I feel a little bit emotional saying that now, but it did come at the personal cost for those years of kind of suppressing this, my life's purpose is sexual energy as a force for good.
Yeah.
But then it got to the point where my stepkids were going off to university. We hadn't told them, hey, your stepmom's a stripper, because that just wouldn't have gone down well. It wasn't age appropriate when I first came into their lives. And that was something that was new as well. I'd always been totally out and proud about it. And suddenly I was needing to keep a lid on it.
I'm getting that sense of, because you said from the beginning, completely open with everyone, your parents, colleagues, the tax man.
Yep.
And now here you were, you know, so the your family, your new family, having to hide and suppress that must have been really tough.
It was tough. And for example, with personal training clients, so I opened a little PT studio in the village that we were just outside of, but I couldn't tell them about that because it was a very gossipy little village, as villages tend to be. So there was all this stuff that I was so proud of. And that was so much a part of me. And I couldn't share any of that with anyone. And it was incredibly tough. And looking back, I mean, as I say, I created the Happy Step family. Would that have happened if they'd found out earlier, or if we'd told them earlier? I think it would have been more challenging, actually. So this is interesting. This is something I haven't thought about. Would I do things differently around that? Because the situation that we've got now is that a bond of trust and deep connection and affection and respect was forged over a very difficult sort of 5 or 6 years, such that at the point when we did tell them, hey, there's something you need to know about Ruth, they were fine with it. And what they have now is this kind of ongoing source of education and of being shame-free, because they, both my stepkids, follow me on Instagram and stuff like that. I offer them places on my courses. They've not gone that far yet. but we've been able to talk about sex with both of them in a way that my husband says he never would have been able to do without the influence of me coming into the family. I think what I would say to anyone who is considering suppressing and hiding such an important part of themselves is to think about, why are you doing this? And is the outcome worth the suffering you're going to go through in suppressing that? And I think for me, the outcome was worth the suffering, but it was a very tough few years. And then I was like, well, I want to be back in the erotic world, because it's where I feel at home. It's where I feel right. And it is my life's purpose. But how on earth am I going to do that? Because I'm now in my early 40s. I'm still living outside of London. I don't really feel, I mean, I couldn't go and work at a strip club in our nearest big town, which would be Milton Keynes, because they wouldn't even have me for an interview in my early 40s, I imagine.
Right.
And so what am I going to do? And I was unsure, but had heard about life coaching as a concept, which is something that I was unfamiliar with, but had heard about it, and had heard about the life coaching school Animas, which is transformational coaching, and decided to sign up to do a diploma. About a month after the end of it, someone who'd been on the course with me contacted me. And you know, when someone says, I want to ask you something, but I don't want to offend you, and I don't want you to be angry, and it's okay to say no. And you're just like, what on earth?
What's coming next?
Yeah. And it was a lady, and she said, would you coach me around my sex life? And it turned out she had been paired up with me in an exercise as part of the coaching diploma, where I had talked about my stripping past. It wasn't something that I shouted about generally, but she knew about it because of this particular exercise we'd done. And she said, I'm about to turn 40. My body started changing. My attitude to sex is changing in a way that I don't like. So, for example, I'm suddenly expecting my partner to look at younger women. There's nothing he's done to suggest that's going to happen. But my whole attitude is changing and I don't like it. But I'm so shy to talk and so worried about sharing some of the things that I know are deep within me. But with you, because of your past, I know you're not going to slut shame me. I know you're not going to judge me. I feel that I can talk openly to you. So I hope you're not offended and you can say no, but would you coach me around sex? And I was like, yes, yes, yes. That was my light bulb moment.
Yeah.
That the coaching diploma that I'd done could actually be applied. All coaching methodologies and exercises can all be applied to sex. So that almost brings us up to now.
Yeah.
I was launching just at the start of the pandemic, and I thought that I could launch and work as a sex coach. But as I said at the start of this podcast, I learned very quickly that there was this whole education that needed to be done first. Mm. One of my jobs when I was stripping was reviewing books about sex. So I had learned a hell of a lot at that point about things like anatomy and things. And I'd underestimated the lack of knowledge that's out there generally. Yeah. So I was like, okay, there's this education process. And I'd also underestimated how embarrassed people felt talking about sex, because I think you'd originally asked me, how did I get to the point where I'm so relaxed? It's because in my 12 years of stripping, I spent far more time talking than actually on stage dancing. And very often the conversation was sex, whether it was with guys out in the pub or in the club, or whether it was with other performers in the dressing room, generally what we were talking about was sex.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm entirely comfortable. I think feeling that you understand kind of how it all works, anatomy and science wise, gives confidence as well. Yeah, that's why I am so comfortable. And as I said, the first light bulb moment people have working with me is, wow, it is possible to be that comfortable. And I don't need to feel ashamed in talking to this person because she's not ashamed. So, yeah.
Well, thank you for that, your journey. And expanding on your journey and being so honest about it, Ruth, exactly what you were saying about that, you know, having to suppress and hold back, you know, something that, as you said, you discovered, I found my purpose. This is what I'm here to do. And having to sort of, as you say, exchange that for a little while for a different purpose, which was, you know, developing your stepfamily. But here you are back again. And I love that story about how a conversation that might not have happened unless your friend and then client had that, oh, I don't know if I'm going to ask you this, but I'm going to ask you anyway, because her need was so strong. And here you are, you know, with this great roster of clients and your presence, and I see your openness to support people in an area where, you know, I would say there's probably not a lot of support or not enough.
It's
really important the work you're doing. How would you, you know, we're gonna talk about some resources that you can share with people in a second, but what would be your kind of, I don't know, top tips or just views on, if you really want to bring more awareness to your intimate life, what would be the places you would go first? I know everyone's different, but in general, because all the people you've worked with,
the things that I see make the most difference kind of pretty much across the board for all clients, the first one is education around anatomy and sexual science.
Yeah.
And there are incredible podcasts. There's some great books. I'll give you all of these to put down in the show notes.
Great.
You can absolutely go and educate yourself around this, whatever gender you are as well.
Yeah.
So education, which will enable you to realize I'm normal. The big thing around this that I see people have revelations around is how in a long-term relationship, our desire style shifts from what's called spontaneous, where we feel like we just suddenly want sex, to what's called responsive, where we need to be creating a sexual scenario in order to then get turned on.
Yeah.
And that latter is so normal that clinically now, if a woman in a long-term relationship presents clinically and says she never, never spontaneously feels like sex, that's considered clinically normal. And so many people don't realize that because of the media, because of this, oh, you should just spontaneously want sex with your partner, or, oh, you've got low desire, or, oh, maybe you shouldn't be together anymore. Maybe the relationship is wrong, all this kind of stuff. And when people learn, no, it's normal. It's totally normal. And all you need to do is recognize that and then come up with strategies to work with that, you know, and that's such a relief for people. You know, I have people crying, thinking, saying, oh, I thought my relationship was over. I should consider splitting up with my husband because we're not having regular sex and I never spontaneously want it. And it's like, well, no, it's normal, this situation. Sorry, I know I've gone off on one, but
no,
I get so passionate about this. So education, books, podcasts, there's great TV series out there at the moment. Netflix has had some great stuff this year. So education is the first thing. Another thing which is a light bulb for people is when I advise them to view sex as a hobby. So I say if your hobby was tennis, would you always wear the same thing when you step onto the court? Would you do exactly the same moves in the same order? Would you never read any books or magazines about tennis, never discuss tennis with anyone? And they're like, no. It's like, well, if you view sex as a hobby, you know, constantly curious about how can we enjoy this more? What can be different? What new things are there science-wise? Or, I mean, I said about clothing with tennis. So clothing-wise or sex toy-wise, you know, this curiosity and also dedicating time to it. If tennis was your hobby, would you never book a tennis court? You just expect at some point in the weekend to go, oh, I feel like tennis. And then your tennis partner would need to be feeling like it as well. You know, no, to dedicate time, to set aside time for sex and view it as a hobby. That's something that makes people go, oh, wow. Yeah, I'd never thought of it that.
Yeah. I think for me, it is that investment of, it is time, but it's mental energy and physical energy. Well, just energy to something that is incredibly important to us that I think we take for granted. We see lots of assumptions around it. Oh, look, if I'm not having sex like they are on this Netflix series I'm watching right now, then I'm failing. So all of that going on. So I think that's really important. It's that investment of the right energy.
Something that's been a revelation for a lot of clients and that I actively use in my sex life as well, is in my partnered sex life, is for us to ask each other to pause and ask, what do you need tonight? Because we can be having sex for lots of different reasons. You know, it might be that we're feeling horny, or it might be that we've had a bad day that has left us feeling really unsettled and we want to feel emotionally close and cared for. There can be lots of reasons that we have sex, but typically in partnered sex, once sex starts, once the first sort of domino is pushed over of, okay, now we're going to have sex, we kind of go a bit onto autopilot and do the same stuff in the same order as we always do. And if instead we can actually stop and check in, what do you need? Might be like, well, actually, I need to absolutely be in charge and be a bit aggressive with you. Or it might be, actually, I need something very slow and loving and to be held. It might be, I want a sexual connection, but I'm exhausted and I don't want to try for an orgasm. And that could be so important, you know, because then that's going to affect how your partner is acting towards you. So just checking in on what do you actually need? And then one of the benefit from that is in the moment, but also wider than that, because sex ends up becoming more varied. You don't just do the same thing every time. So it's more varied, it's more satisfying because it's tailored to what you need in that moment. Mm. Therefore, it's more fulfilling. Therefore, you want it more. People's big desire, they say to me, is to have spontaneous sex again, even when they learn that it's totally normal to have responsive sex. But in order for us to spontaneously want sex with a long-term partner, the sex we're having with them needs to be fantastic. It needs to be good enough that we do just think about it at 10:30 on a Saturday morning when we're doing the washing up or whatever. And in order for it to be good and fulfilling, it needs to. We need to recognise that what we need at different times changes.
One of
my clients described that as their power phrase from the point they learned it. What do you need tonight? And that they always check in now.
Yeah.
So that's powerful.
Great. I love that. Just bringing that real intention to the communication is like, you know, what do I need? What do I need? And recognizing that, and then it's so sort of getting on the same page rather than assuming we're on the same page, not but even reading the same book right now.
Yeah.
that importance of the communication. So thank you for that. There's some tips, some ideas, and what we always like to do is leave people wanting more, as you were sort of describing there. But Ruth, what would be your invitation for people to do next? If this has really sparked an interest, and as we said, this conversation isn't going on everywhere, but it's a really, really important one to be having. So again, thank you for coming on and talking about it. But what would be your invitation for people to do now?
My invitation, if you just want something that you don't need to directly engage in, is podcasts. Mm. So I love podcasts because you are hearing people talking about sex. And if we can normalize that, then we can talk more easily. Something I always say at the end of all my one-off webinars and courses and everything, think of the one thing that you've learned that's been your biggest light bulb moment from this, go and tell someone else about it. The more we can lift the shame of talking about sex, the better it is for everyone. And just to briefly say, yes, it's about pleasure and it's about satisfaction in relationships, but then that affects our physical health and mental health. Lifting the shame of talking about it helps protect our safety. There's so much more to it than just simply, are we having a good time in bed? You know, it's an important social issue, I think, lifting the shame. There's loads and loads of sex podcasts out there. And they are, if you're on a Apple Podcasts or, you know, one of the mainstream podcast platforms, they will all be education focused.
Yeah.
So it's the same as social media. They're not allowed to, their intent cannot be to arouse you. They have to be educational.
Got it.
My favorites include Sexology Podcast with Dr. Nazanin Mo'ali and Justin Laymiller, Sex and Psychology. Is great. I mean, it's all my favorite things, but there's lots out there, whether you're looking for yourself, whether you're looking for your teenage child, whether you want something jokey, something very high science, there's lots out there. So listening to podcasts. If you are thinking, I want to take a step beyond that and apply it to me, to myself, then you can look out for my webinars, but particularly for my flagship course. So I have an 8-week course called the Passionate Program. I run it 3 times a year, generally. The next one, as of this recording, is starting on October 24th, 2022. Right. So it's coming up next month.
Yeah.
And what that does is take you through this 8-week journey into developing a much deeper understanding of sex and of yourself sexually. Everyone who's ever taken the Passionate program, and it's anonymous participation, and you don't have to share anything back with me, you do it entirely yourself. But I sometimes like to think how everyone who's ever done it, their sort of suite of 8 workbooks at the end is going to be absolutely unique. Mm. And it kind of forms their own user manual to themselves as a sexual being. Yeah, I'm so proud of that. And people tell me that, you know, it's changed their life, it's changed their whole relationship to pleasure, it's saved their marriage, all sorts of amazing stuff. And beyond that, just start tuning into what's out there. and don't be so scared of it. I think people are scared because porn can be so misleading around sex, but the quality of sex education stuff out there at the moment, if you're on Apple Podcasts, if you're on Netflix and it's educational, the quality is amazing. Don't be scared.
Yeah.
Dive into it, learn, and share it with the people you care about.
Yeah, amazing. And you know, that's everything you've been talking about, the normalizing it, not being scared of it, all these things that I think that's why this conversation, I'm so keen to have it with you, Ruth, is just to smash those stigmas and to come past the taboos that we create ourselves and the world creates around us, but we create a lot in our own heads, as we talked about beliefs a lot. So important. So Ruth, I just wanted to thank you for just your wisdom, your knowledge, but also your honesty in everything you brought into the conversation today. I've really, really enjoyed it. And I did say to people on the end of the last episode, sort of pointing to this one, if you let it, will change your life.
I hope so.
And I think that's what you do for people. So thank you so much.
My pleasure.
There you go. The invitation to change your life is right there. Thank you again for everything you brought to that conversation, Ruth. It was an emotional experience, as you could no doubt hear, and that level of vulnerability and openness takes a real honesty with yourself. So I really appreciate that. Takeaways from this one on this subject are going to be very personal, I'd suggest, but maybe a few words of encouragement from me as someone who's been on and is still on this journey. I think this idea of being honest with yourself is a great place to start. And knowing that not being an expert in this area is entirely natural and normal, because we've probably been comparing ourselves to the wrong people, to fictional characters, for quite some time, which maybe means we often shy away from more conversations about sex. And I can only say more talk is only good. It may well be super awkward to start with, but it gets easier, I promise you. And Ruth's invitation to see sex as a hobby is a brilliant way to reframe kind of any of that awkwardness. Think about how much effort you put into things you love doing to get better at them. Well, sex is exactly the same. And the resources are all there for you. There is so much education that's really accessible and a great place to start for your own journey. So do check out the show notes, as I said, for loads of tips that Ruth has shared. And most of all, go and have fun with all of this. As ever, if you enjoyed this episode, please do give me the great pleasure of leaving a short review on Apple Podcasts and passing this episode on to people who you know would appreciate it and enjoy it. I'll be back with another amazing Mojo conversation in 2 weeks' time. But until then, I hope your mojo continues to flow.